Honors. I'm Shelley Hammack. I'm the attorney for the plaintiff appellant, Donald Canfield, who's here with me today. This case...
Wish to reserve any time?
Yes. 4 minutes, please.
Four?
Thank you. This case arises out of a claim for defamation brought against a co-worker, Michelle Clark. The defamatory statements include statements that Mr. Canfield had a gun on his person while at work. Mr. Canfield was an employee of the school district. He had been a long-term employee, beginning his employment in 1992. Ms. Clark was a new hire, in part hired with Mr. Canfield's assistants. He was the foreman of the maintenance electricians at the school district.
We are familiar with the facts, and since time is short, you might want to proceed directly to your argument.
Okay. The two areas that I want to focus on today are the court's adoption of defendant's special verdict form, and in particular, question number three. Question number three required a jury to find that the defamatory statements made by Ms. Clark were the proximate cause of damage to Mr. Canfield. The statements include that Mr. Canfield had a gun on his person while at school during school hours. That is an act that is illegal.
Are you saying that causation is not an element of a defamation claim?
It doesn't. It's damages. When you have a defamatory per se statement, which this was, it's a statement that causes injury to him in his business. It alleged that he engaged in a criminal unlawful act. Then he's entitled to damages per se and presumed damages. He doesn't have to show that he was damaged. He doesn't have to show actual damage.
Does he have to show causation? Is that not an element of the tort of defamation?
You have to...
Even if you have defamation per se, is it not always an element, causation?
Causation is an element of defamation, but not causation as far as damages go. I mean, the way that it was argued and the way that the jury verdict is written is misleading, because it initially asks if the statements are defamatory, which the jury found they were. The jury even found they were stated with malice.
So is it your position then that the third question should have said, if you have answered the previous two questions yes, you must proceed to award damages?
There's a number of different ways I think the third question could have been written. But I think that if they found the statements were defamatory and they were made with malice, the question could have asked what were his damages. The way that it was worded put the burden upon plaintiffs to establish damages when in defamatory per se that is not required. It's not only the jury.
Well, you don't have to establish actual damages.
No.
But do you not have to establish causation? And did you not argue in your own argument that causation was a necessary element? Because that's what question three is, proximate cause of damage.
Yeah, but it requires that there be evidence of damage, and that is what defense counsel argued in their closing argument.
But I'm just still trying to get at what would have been a proper, in your mind, statement of question number three, or are you saying it should not have been included at all?
I don't believe it should have been. I think it was confusing to the jury, and I don't believe it should have been included.
So in other words, then, your answer to my previous question is yes, you do not think there is a proximate cause element once you have a yes answer to those previous two questions.
Not in the way that it is worded in question number three, no.
Okay. If you take question number three out, you don't really get proximate cause broken out as a separate element.
No, you don't. And I think in finding that the statement was defamatory, like the definition of defamation that was provided to the jury, and the regular definition of defamation is a statement that causes damage to reputation or that injures a party.
Tends to.
Yeah. So I think the jury, by finding that the statements were defamatory, found that. I think
but,
that's
but
sufficient.
But if a defamatory statement is one that tends to cause damage,
Yes.
Then finding that someone has made a defamatory statement is not a finding that it actually did cause damage.
But see, that's the thing. We don't have to prove damages. And when you say that it has to cause damage, it makes the jury believe that they have to, that damages have to be proven. And especially when defense counsel in their closing argument is arguing that. It was confusing to the jury. We believe that it was confusing to the jury, especially given the jury found that they were defamatory and that they were done with malice. We believe that the jury could have found that they were defamatory per se. We believe as a matter of law they're defamatory per se, and that the court, in failing to enter a directed verdict regarding that, did so in error. Any statement that an employee of a school district carries a gun on their person is a violation of the law, and would be taken very seriously and cause damage to them and their business. And in this case, Mr. Canfield was escorted off the property by police as a result of those statements. We do believe that with...
Was that uncontested, by the way? I thought the school district say that Mr. Good escorted him off the property.
He did, along with police. There were police. I don't believe that that's ever been disputed.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Mark O'Donnell on behalf of the respondent, Michelle Clark, in this case. I now know the meaning of the phrase, it's deja vu all over again, because this case has now been tried twice and we are in the Court of Appeals twice on this case. We are asking that the court affirm the jury's decision that either the statement was not defamatory per se, or alternatively, that there were no damages that were caused to Mr. Canfield as a consequence of the alleged defamatory statement, which was made to two individuals. And I want to go right to the
suggestion seems to be that the finding that the statements were made with malice is the equivalent of defamatory per se.
I don't think it is, Your Honor. There was an issue relative to whether or not Mr. Canfield was a public official. And so one of the issues relating to a public official is if the statement is made with malice. That's why that question was in there, to overcome that issue of was it made with malice. And I want to talk briefly about this issue of the criminal conduct. And I think it's really important to note this. That was not alleged as an assignment of error in this case. The plaintiff has only taken error with the form of the special verdict. He has not taken exception to or objection to the giving of any jury instructions or the failure to give any jury instructions. And instruction number 9 defined what a defamatory statement and defamatory statement per se was. And there's no reference in there to it being that refers to a crime. And the reason is, and this was argued at the time of instructions, the trial court felt it's not just enough that it reference a crime. The case law says it's got to be a crime involving moral turpitude. Okay? It has to be a very significant type of crime. So my point is, it's a misstatement to say that it's defamatory per se, if you're referencing just a crime. It has to be more significant than just a crime.
Secondly, I don't understand the plaintiff's argument to be that. The plaintiff's argument is more towards getting at the confusion that I think there really is kind of some confusion in the law about what do the cases about defamation per se mean when they talk about actual damages? Because there certainly is some basis in the law for the plaintiff is reading those cases as meaning, you know, that when you have a defamatory per se statement, there's something less that you have to do than if you don't.
Well, number one, I think that there is evidence that supports the conclusion, that there's substantial evidence that supports a determination that it was not defamatory per se, because one of the elements of a defamatory per se statement is that it causes injury, and they use different words, injury, harm, damage, and the trade or occupation of the plaintiff. The evidence in this case, and there was substantial evidence, was relating to how these alleged statements impacted him in the workplace. And so there's substantial evidence to support the conclusion that the jury determined the plaintiff had not met their burden of proof in establishing that it was a defamatory per se
and
statement.
That was certainly your theory at the
yeah.
trial.
Yeah.
But do you yourself actually think you understand what defamation per se law means when it talks about actual damages?
Your Honor, I do think I now understand that. And I think that your questions, Your Honor, are hitting the nail right on the head. Okay? Because you still have to show that there is some proximate cause. You've still got to show causation of damage. Okay? Now, what does it mean when they talk about presumed damage?
Or actual damages.
Okay? And so you look at the cases that we've cited, the Arnold case, the Maison case, the Caruso case, and the Valdez case. Not one of those cases says that the jury must award damages. The language that the court uses is it means plaintiff need not prove special damages. Damages may be presumed. It doesn't say damages must be presumed. That's the Maison case. The Arnold case, the jury may award damages.
The question here is whether 3, though, tells the jury not that they may or not that damages are presumed, but asks them to identify the damages caused.
Well, so you
something less than what they were actually entitled to do.
When you look at the verdict form, you need to look at the verdict form in conjunction with all of the instructions. Instruction number 9 told them that if the jury found it was a defamatory per se statement, that the plaintiff did not need to prove actual damages. And as the court noted earlier, the plaintiff's counsel herself argued off that instruction that if you find that there were damages that were proximate caused, you may then presume that there are damages that flow from the statement. So causation remains a critical link in all of this, because a statement is made does not necessarily mean that the plaintiff is entitled to monetary damages. And those cases that I've referenced indicate, you know, the Caruso case, libel per se presumes damages to the plaintiff, presumes damages, but it's the responsibility to decide the amount of the damages, if any. And that's the language from the court. So the plaintiff's position...
Do you believe, then, that even if you have a statement that is defamatory per se, as defined by Instruction 9,
yes,
does the plaintiff need to prove that that statement caused damages, or would it have been appropriate to... in some way tamper with, rewrite question number 3 to get rid of that and say you may award damages whatever amount,
yeah,
right? Actual damage, defamatory per se damages could be quite substantial.
Yeah, and in some of those cases, the damages are quite substantial. And in some of those cases, the damages are quite insubstantial, with the point being it's the jury who determines what the amount of the damages is if the plaintiff meets their burden in proving defamatory per se. Okay? They've still got to prove that they were damaged in some way, shape, or form, and that the statement was the proximate cause of the damages that they claim. Do they have to put a dollar value on that in terms of I had counseling expenses, I had medical expenses? Do they need to show special damages? No. And I think that's where we get into the confusion on this. But not one of these cases says a plaintiff is automatically entitled to damages on a finding of defamation per se. The cases all say the jury determines what the amount of the damage is. And the Caruso case very specifically uses the language, if any. And so the evidence before the jury was very significant relative to whether there were any damages that he suffered at all as a consequence of the statement that was made to 2 people. And we don't think that the court, the panel should substitute its judgment for the jury's judgment, because the jury was told that they could that the plaintiff didn't need to show any actual damages. Okay. The other issue I'll just talk briefly about in terms of admitting some of the documents. I don't think there was error there. I think they fall within exceptions to the to the hearsay rule, and if there was...
Well, the Bluth report has a lot of hearsay in it, which is somewhat comparable, don't you think, to the information that was excluded in the Brundage case?
Well, the point that I'm making on this, Your Honor, is the same evidence that was contained in the notes of the Bliss report was also before the jury on Exhibit Number 20 that the plaintiff had offered, and Exhibit Number 63 that the plaintiff had offered.
Is that the arbitration opinion?
I believe 63, yes, 63 was the arbitration decision.
So in other words, even if it was error, it was already there.
It was already there. It was already before the jury. The jury had already heard about it. Unless the court has any questions at this point, I don't have anything further to add.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So just a point of clarification, this case has not been tried twice. It was denied.
We're aware of the procedure.
Okay. And my point in bringing up the criminal allegation is to show that it causes harm in his business, not that it standing alone is an element of defamation or provides defamation per se. So going on to the issue with the just briefly with the jury verdict form, we do believe that it could have been resolved with a different question, even a question asking the jury if they found that the statements were defamatory per se. I believe
it
was.
Did you propose that? Did you propose that?
I believe we did. And I think what we asked the court to do is not break it out into elements. I believe that there's a problem with breaking it out into elements the way that it was broken out into. And what we asked is that the court either adopt our verdict form, and I believe our verdict form just asked if the statements were defamatory and how much they awarded for damages.
That is what your proposal was, but where is the element of causation in that?
It's not in there, because we believe if a jury is to find that the statements are defamatory, that they tend to cause damage to reputation or hold a person up to contempt or ridicule, that it's within the requirement that they find it's defamatory.
Well, you know, that kind of flies in the face of a lot of case law that says that the element of causation is just like any other tort in the tort of defamation.
But I think if you apply it the way the defendant has argued, I believe what it does is it guts defamation per se. If you're going to require that somebody show that it caused damage, but say that damages can be presumed or...
But your special verdict form only speaks of defamation. It does not speak of defamation per se.
Yes.
So I mean, if you want to say now, well, we could have thought of a better instruction, a better verdict form, that doesn't give us a basis to reverse because you have the obligation at the time to come up with a pretty good verdict form that, you know, allows you to argue this. But I don't see one in the record.
And I think in our oral argument, we argued in part that. But I believe that the verdict form that we presented and asked the court to adopt was a correct one. I think it was sufficient. I think it was sufficient not to provide any confusion for the jury, sufficient for us to allow the parties to argue their theory of the case and not be misleading. I think the problem with the one that was adopted by the court is the confusion that it provides.
But doesn't it track Instruction 10, which says you had to find what damages you find are approximately caused by the defamatory statements?
If they don't find defamation per se,
but
yes.
Even if defamation per se, I mean, you would agree you still have to prove certain consequences,
yes,
of that defamatory statement, that it exposed them to hatred, and contempt, ridicule, etc. I mean, you still have to show that there was some causation that resulted in those damages. I mean, so you're not really arguing that. It seems to me that there's no causation issue here.
Yeah, I think in finding that the statements were defamatory, it includes a finding that there's causation. So that it tends to cause damage to reputation.
So you mean even if it's not damages per se, any finding of defamation results in damages?
No. if it's not defamatory per se, then I think we have to prove actual damages. We have to show what the damages are.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.